Welcome back, new talkers, to the Bob Davis Podcast. This is podcast 623. This is going to be a little bit difficult, but often when you are non-aligned and in the middle, you offend both sides. And I had a lunch with a friend of mine this week, and we talked about whether or not I'm trying to alienate people. I'm not, and I'm going to talk about it in this podcast. It's going to be weird, but got to do it. Podcast 623. Here we go. So if you want to get out and have some fun on a Friday or Saturday night or a weeknight, listen to this. There's something new and fun to do these days, whether it is a date night, business client appreciation event, a corporate team building event, something with your family, or a friend's night out. It's at Brush Studio West End in St. Louis Park, Minnesota. Now, I can tell you that an artist will guide you through making and creating a painting. And I can tell you that you'll come away with a real painting, something you can hang on your walls at home or at work, something you and your friends and your co-workers or your family would be really proud of. But the other night, I actually went over to Brush Studio, and it's actually better if I take you inside a Brush Studio event a little bit, and you can kind of hear the reaction and what people do. So let's go on into Brush Studio.
Do you mind if I ask you some questions?
Sure.
You guys having fun?
Yes.
Yeah. Tons of fun.
What are you painting?
Called,
we're painting birch trees and in the nighttime with a little cardinal.
Gun and
So they give you paint, right?
Yeah, and you just follow the people at the front.
The person at the front.
And then you just follow their brakes and everything. And yeah, I don't know.
It's really fun.
Different thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, on a Friday night.
And a fun thing to do.
Yeah,
we're having a good time. We got the whole family here.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
So
I got my wife and our two sons and their fiance and one's girlfriend.
I didn't even know I could.
This is one, probably the most fun you can have at a job. Seriously. My favorite part is when people just completely go off the rails and do something that I would never think of or other people wouldn't think of, but they came here with like an intention. It's a thing to do on a Friday night that isn't watching TV, isn't going to a movie. You're being social with a group. You get a little wine or something, but it's not like that's all you're, like at a bar, that's all you're there to do, you know. I've been teaching for 22 years, I make all kinds of stuff on my own.
You look like an artist. You have
what?
Fun?
Oh,
you
absolutely.
Look like an artist.
I just found my inner artist.
Your inner artist.
Brush Studio in the West End St. Louis Park. 22 brands of beer, an extensive wine collection, catering from Crave in the West End. You're going to have a good time because they are event planning ninjas at Brush. Date night, client appreciation, corporate team building, family, friends. They'll all be great. Sign up online at Brush Studio in the West End St. Louis Park at brushstudio.net. Brushstudio.net, or you can reach out to Brush at 952-236-1700. That's 952-236-1700. Brush Studio. Well, I had lunch with a friend recently who asked me in our conversation at lunch, are you trying to alienate your audience? Because he'd been listening to some of my recent podcasts. And the comment knocked me back on my heels a little bit. And so it is time to do a little bit of a review about a lot of things, about where the podcast started, how they've changed, why they've changed, and more importantly, how I've changed in the almost 10 years that I've been doing podcasting. And almost 20 years that I've been doing talk radio in some way, shape, or form. So, first of all, no, I'm not trying to alienate my audience. I think sometimes the way that I do what I do is so intense that as long as this array, this intensity is directed to someone else, you don't notice it. But when it is directed at you, it really irritates people. And there's really nothing I can do about that because I can change my delivery a little bit. But when I am talking about something that I feel is important, that needs to come across, It's going to be an honest reflection of my frustration, or it's going to be an honest reflection of who I am and what I think. And that's all fine and well when it's directed at somebody else. But when you feel as though it is directed to you, it produces a defensive reaction. And then because I'm so intense, and this is the way I am, I mean, what you're hearing pretty much is the way that I am in life. People have a lot of problems with it. They just don't understand how intense I am. They think I'm a funny guy, or they think I'm happy-go-lucky, and until, you know, the boil is pricked, and then I go crazy because I'm a very intense person, and particularly about politics, and particularly about politics today. So no, I'm not trying to alienate the audience, but I'm also not going to sugarcoat what I do, because I think that's just fake. I won't try to ingratiate myself with people. I won't try to be the guy that comes and talks to everybody. You know, I follow my passions. I'm passionate and strong in the way that I feel, and I don't try to hide it. So no, I'm not trying to alienate people, but I'm also not going to pretend that I don't have something to say that I'm passionate about. The most significant thing that has happened to me and these podcasts in the last year is my refusal to take a side in the 2016 election. And I think it's confused a lot of people, because in this country, politically, when you refuse to take a side, then you're against both sides. So the "are you trying to alienate your audience" comment came from a recent podcast, I think, that I did about news sources. It's the one about getting your news groove back. And probably some of the other podcasts I did recently, which dealt with facts as we know them on various stories that have become shibboleths to the conservative side. Always, these podcasts are really done with the caveat that time may change a particular story and a particular conclusion, that certain predictions about stories or developments might show that what is actually happening either turns out to be the way one side views it or not, and other things politically will never be resolved and will always be a source of spin or a source of disagreement by people from various political persuasions. That is a part of politics, and you can't do anything about that. But I think some people took that podcast as an attack. I do think that a lot of conservative people are alienated anyway. And so when you do something with a level of intensity and passion like I do, they take it as an attack on them directly. It is never attacks on individuals directly. That particular podcast came from a weekend monitoring social media, and my shock at the stories that people were sharing and reposting. And I'm not going to go back in through the whole podcast, but these were stories that were not sourced. They spawned discussions on stories which turned out to be false. They were just trial balloons, and that's about the nicest thing that you can say about them. Most of the time, clickbait, which oddly enough is also admired. If you print lies and then you post them, somehow people admire you if you get lots of clicks and posts and repost, as though that is some sort of badge of honor for basically telling lies. And as I said, those kinds of lies, those kinds of posts and reposts form a chain of knowledge, incorrect in most cases, that informs a chain of reasoning. And as I said in the podcast, those ideas form a basic political idea. And if it is based on bad information or lies, I'm sorry, then it can be pretty dangerous. Whether it's a conspiracy theory, predictions about what's going to happen, or theories about what's going on in a particular case. And just as an aside, we are living in an Orwellian construct. We are living in a world where they can control the television set, they can listen to what you're saying, they can grab your metadata, they know what people are thinking and what they're saying. And so when we don't know where these stories are coming from, then the only thing that an intelligent person can do is view them as manipulation. So it's a nice Orwellian world. We can have a salad, you know, we can get a nice cup of coffee, but we are living in an Orwellian construct nonetheless. And I think people needed to know what a journalistic standard is and how to read a story so that you can look for sources, confirmations, and so forth, which is something that I've learned from reading literally thousands and thousands of pages of news over the years. You know, another one is how to vet a writer. so that you know where he or she gets their funding, who they work for, and so on. Who's the, you know, where does this guy who did this really great video get his money to do these videos? Where does this guy who has this blog, who funds the blog? Those kinds of things. You know, in Republican circles, everybody knows George Soros does this and George Soros does that, but they don't know that the Koch brothers do things too, or that the rich guys from wherever do things too and fund people as well. They just assume that anything that says what they agree with must be somebody who's really passionate and positive and great because they agree with them. But in many cases, that's not the case. In fact, some of those are the most diabolical stories that I've seen. I never thought basically stating something that like that as fact would be controversial, and especially with Republicans, a party which has always prided itself on being rational. But apparently journalistic standards are controversial. And based on the response to that podcast, I can only conclude that Republicans, people who call themselves conservative, just want to hear things that buttress their worldview and nothing else, just like everyone else. So they're not really rational. It used to be that Republicans would say, well, how do you tell a Republican? You know, well, you tell them because the Republicans and the conservatives, they're the only people that are rational. But that's not true. They used to say that the right was rational, the left was irrational and emotional. Today, both sides are irrational and emotional. So what I'm finding is that if you don't take a position and you say, well, this is what I don't understand about this story, you can't say that this actually happened because you don't know that yet. Doesn't mean it won't be true in a month or two, but we don't know that's true. And if you actually run these stories down and take some time to do that, you find out they're not true. And people say, as my friend did, well, I don't have time to do that. And I said, that's why I'm doing these podcasts. This is what I spend my time doing. This is the kind of content I'm producing. A lot of people don't like what I'm saying because I'm saying it with great amount of passion and intensity, and that is there's a lot of chaff out there when it comes to journalism, and there's a lot of bad information that's actually informing people and forming a knowledge chain and forming a decision-making chain and ending up as political philosophy that is leading people off into the weeds and making them easily manipulated. But in order to talk about this, I'm going to have to do a little history, and I'm going to start with a little history of talk radio, which people enjoy hearing. I have often talked about the history of radio and the history of talk radio. I have not been kind to radio recently, and I'm certainly not kind to talk radio in its present form, which began in the late 90s. Now, you're going to hear me talk about this in future podcasts, because whenever I talk about the economy today, you know, I'm going to be talking about some of these ideas about Buy American and some of the things that President Trump is trying to do about bringing foreign manufacturing or companies in the United States manufacturing overseas, bringing that manufacturing back to the United States in an effort to create jobs. It doesn't matter where you fall on the political side of that issue. I've talked to people who are furious over this. I've talked to people who support it. The fact is that companies are preparing to bring some of their manufacturing back to the United States, and there's certainly reasons to manufacture in the U.S. It depends on your situation. But if you're working for one of those companies and you're considering bringing manufacturing back to the United States, please consider Depot Star in Minnesota, American Design Engineering and Manufacturing, DEPOT, Depot Star. They do all kinds of great things. Visit their website at depotstar.com. Well, we're getting into the warm weather, and that means motorcycles. It means people riding. It means it's important to start to look for them, and it's important to start seeing them. And if you ride, you know how important that is. Now, I've been talking about Ciro3D, which is a great company. Ciro3D makes great motorcycle products and accessories, and I'm focusing on the lighting options because of the safety impact. I heard a story this week that a lot of guys that ride with their girlfriends or their wives, they're their wives really like Ciro 3D's lighting options because they want to be seen, especially these badass LED lights, that signal lights and lights that light up the back. And the wife or the girlfriend really wants to be seen on that motorcycle. And of course, if you're riding, you want to be seen too. So check out the lighting options and solutions, as well as stuff like drink holders and smartphone device holders that are really kick-ass. Happy spring and ride safe, Ciro3D.com, or click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. It's green and it's got the Ciro logo, and you can see some of that lighting that I've been talking about at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com or at Ciro3D.com, Ciro3D.com. Now, back in the late 90s, there was no social media, there were no blogs, there was no Huffington Post, Breitbart, there was no Red State, nobody'd invented those things yet. There was some blogging, but for the most part, that came later in the 2000s. There was no Huffington Post, Breitbart, there was no Red State, there was certainly no Wall Street Journal portal, or the New York Times portal, or the Star Tribune portal, or any of these newspapers, which have now become more successful as websites than they are as actual newspaper. There was no Real Clear Politics. There was no Daily Cause. So we were in a world where when talk radio emerged as a fresh venue for political talk after the Fairness Doctrine regulations were lifted by the FCC during the Reagan administration, and as the FCC and the FTC were at the same time relaxing ownership rules so that radio companies could own more than 7 AMs and 7 FMs, which is what it always was, it also happened at the time that AM radio was dying, AM music radio was dying, and they didn't know what to do with these radio stations. And so AM talk radio spawned a conservative movement because it found a venue in nobody knew what to do with their AM radio station. So they put some syndicated hosts on. You had people like Rush move from Kansas City to WABC, which, by the way, nobody liked Rush for at least a couple of years. And he was championed by a guy that I met and worked with, and it was only until he began to have some rating success that they actually said, well, this guy might be good. So here was a guy who was a pioneer, a talk radio pioneer, who spawned a whole group of people who were either imitators or quite unique. Prior to Rush, there was the Grease Man at DC 101 and Howard Stern, who were called shock jocks. But there was no quote-unquote rational talk radio. There was no drumbeat. And that drumbeat, once it hit the air, began to spawn a conservative movement because there was no place else to go for conservative, quote unquote, commentary and community. What was this conservative movement? It was basically the Reagan presidency. It was libertarian, moderate and religious Republicans that had no place to go, began to call themselves quote-unquote conservatives, and the rest is history. And this was the environment I came up in. This is the environment that people like Bill O'Reilly began to make their migration from wherever they started to where they would ultimately end up, including Sean Hannity and others. And the thing is, I really want everybody to consider this, and I'm talking to people who are a little older now. That was nearly 20 years ago, 1997, 1996, 1995, 1994. And in that time, I don't need to recount what has happened, but basically the media center has migrated, and I'm talking about the place where you get all the media, has migrated from the car radio or the portable radio or the portable black and white television, which I remember watching in the bathroom, to the smartphone. And really it migrated from cable TV and portable radio and portable television, over-the-air television, to the desktop, and then eventually to the smartphone. So it's only just recently that we have actually even been able to get audio and video on computers that didn't, freeze up and stop or sound bad or any of those things. We now have a fluid delivery system for audio and video 24 hours a day on your smartphone. And if you have a new smartphone, whether it's whether it's a Samsung, some kind of Android device, or an iPhone, the new ones work really well. So we now have a new media center that is 10,000 times more powerful than just an AM radio station. And every political point of view on the planet is within reach in every language, and anything and everything can be written up and said and reposted and resonated and searched and presented as the truth, whether it is true or not. And I don't think everyone really understands this. It took me a while to even understand this. So I started talk radio after a 25-year career in music radio and radio management. So I understand radio, I understand research, I understand political research, I did a lot of that, I understand television, I worked in television, and, you know, how it happened is history, but basically I was out after 25 years in music just because the local program directors didn't make decisions anymore, and I went to work for KSTP because they called me up and said, do you want to do this show? I've talked about this many, many times. And at that time, you went on the air and you could pretty much talk about anything. And then the election of 2000 happened and the effects, and we talked about that for a year solid, and you could not get away from it. The phones would ring consistently every time you started talking about that particular topic, the Gore versus Bush thing. The phones just wouldn't stop ringing. And then 9/11 happened and the phones wouldn't stop ringing, and talk radio became more shrill and more partisan, and talk show hosts and radio companies were then suddenly in that political environment depended on to provide the political support for Republican candidates and the Republican agenda. The audience expected it, the station expected it, and I fell into that trap along with a lot of other people. And we did so willingly, up to and including the Iraq War and the war in Afghanistan and the election of 2008, where no one considered another point of view except the Republican point of view, the acceptable point of view for quote-unquote conservatives, and the rest is history. And then Obama became president, and the advocacy continued. And I want to talk very quickly about being on the radio the day after Obama won the presidency. It was like being at a funeral and trying to tell people, you know, you just kind of have to go back to the drawing board, and you have to go back to work, and you have to find candidates, and you have to rebuild the party. Much like the Democrats today, the Republican Party in 2008 was a mess, and they were absolutely demoralized, and they had to rebuild the party. And I don't even think it's been completed. I don't think the Republican Party has finished rebuilding, but that's another podcast. And the advocacy pressure continued after Obama became president, and it didn't matter how ugly it was. He wasn't a citizen. He wasn't this. He wasn't that. And again, those are some of those political issues that'll never be resolved. And that was the reaction to the first victory from Obama. Now, you may not realize it, but during this time, the other thing that is the other shoe in this thing is starting to drop, and that is that people who started listening to talk radio, who formed that conservative core that listened to AM talk radio back in 1992 and 3 and 4 and 5, were in their 30s and 40s then, and they were young listeners to talk radio. And they are now in their 60s and 70s, and their lives have matured as they have aged. And in general, new, younger listeners to AM talk radio have not taken their places. In fact, to any kind of radio, have not taken their places because they have other options. They don't have to listen to the radio. And when I go on and speak to really anyone, but to conservative groups in particular, whether it's the Tea Party or it's Republicans, one of the first things that I see is a pronounced tilt toward 65-plus adults, primarily male and white, and a pronounced shift toward the same demographics in Republican circles as well. So it is a very old group of people. It is a very white group of people, not making a value judgment about it, but it is, and it's very male. And I'm not sure that this is something that people in Republican circles really understand or realize. Yes, there are young people. Yes, there are women. But in general, the people that I talk to in the state of Minnesota are really not. They're usually 50-plus men. Now, we are all on a journey together in this life. And I think personally aging is insidious. You see your friends age and you don't think that you're aging. My mom, who is 95 years old this year, said to me at one point, you know, you don't think that you're old. I'm 95 years old. I look at myself in the mirror and I say, who is that woman? Because I still feel like I'm 25 years old, you see. And so you're in this spaceship called your body, and you don't see yourself unless you look in a mirror and you wonder, where did the time go? That's kind of what is happening with this group of conservatives who started out 30 or 40 years ago or 20 years ago. And they have changed with time, they have aged with time, and so has the movement. That little kid who was 9 or 10, it was your grandson or your son, is now a man with his own views of the world. He came up at a certain time. Maybe he was born, and became, at least sentient during 9/11. Those are powerful events that influenced these kids. And they don't have views in this world, of the world, that coincide always with your views or their father's views or their grandfather's views. And they have a different life experience, and they look at things differently, and yet they are going to inherit this country. They are going to inherit the political atmosphere. They are going to inherit these two political powers or political parties. So I worked on talk radio all the way through the 2000s, through the 2012 election, in which all the Republicans had been convinced that Mitt Romney would defeat the worst president in history, Barack Obama, day after day after day, about talking about stuff, phones ringing, taking calls, people getting upset. The next day, something different, and nothing would happen. The next day, something different, and it was just outrage, day after day after day. Fan the flames, throw chum in the water, get people excited, day after day after day, and nothing ever happened. They didn't do anything about anything, and people were then deeply shocked and surprised when they did not see Barack Obama lose to Mitt Romney, because they had been told by all the people on talk radio that, in fact, Mitt Romney was going to win. Now, I'm one of the few that said that he probably wouldn't, because the polls didn't show that. And I got quite a lot of hassle from the radio station about that. And I got a lot of hassle from my talk show partner over that, because I wasn't on the team at the time. And I never forgot that, because the fact is, the polls didn't show that Mitt Romney was going to win, plain and simple. This is exactly what happened to Hillary Clinton and her supporters in 2016, except it was even worse, where people in mainstream media were convinced that she was going to win, that the polls said she was going to win. The polls never said that. The polls, and if you listen to the podcast that I did during that period of time, you know that I never said that she was going to win. I said the polls show that either of the two of them could win. And again, while this is going on, while all these things are happening through history, the audience is aging. You know, cable television news basically copied the talk radio format most recently. And as the radio business at the same time experienced lower revenues and debt levels were getting higher, and they were making less and less money and spending less and less on local radio stations. And so since 2010, talk radio in particular suffers from bad demographics, old people, poor ratings, and bad revenues. And people just aren't listening anymore. Radio in general is dying, giving way to podcasts and YouTube. YouTube and other information sources and applications. As I said earlier, people have choices. So after I left the radio station in 2013, as I talked about in a previous podcast, I started podcasting in earnest. And it took me a while to start mobile podcasting. And when I did that with the ambulance, I decided to cover the 2016 election, starting with the Scott Walker campaign. So I went out to Waukesha to see Scott Walker, whom I admired for as a guy who took a stand against what I consider to be a pernicious influence, and that is unions in government workforces, and won again and again and again. And I was shocked by what I saw. I saw a very old, very religious, very white, very rural crowd supporting Scott Walker, someone I liked. So then, when I continued to cover the primaries as a neophyte at first in Iowa and South Carolina and Florida and Texas, I watched Republican politicians play to that crowd over and over and over again and say the same things over and over again, the same tired lines. And I lost respect for almost every one of the candidates. Now, I never was a person who respected the Democratic Party very much, because I don't agree with them politically most of the time. And I don't want to get into a fight, and I don't want to lose my Democrat listeners, because it's not a hatred thing. I just don't agree with their political points of view on a lot of stuff. Some things I do, some things I don't. But for the most part, I tend to be very much these days a market anarchist, in that I don't believe that I can't stand the government. I think the government is the most negative, pernicious, dangerous force in our lives today. And it took me some time to get there, but that's where I'm at politically. The only really interesting thing on the campaign trail was Trump's crowds, based on overbooking generally and the fact that he was a TV celebrity. And he talked from the cuff, and he would say anything, promise anything to get a rise out of the crowds. They called him a populist, although that is not what he is, and I've talked about that in many podcasts. I came away from this experience pretty much disgusted, both by the people that I listened to in the crowds, and if you listen to the podcast, you'll hear the montages of comments, by the media coverage of these events, because what I felt is something called a principled Republican or a principled conservative has faded out of existence. And I decided then and there that I wasn't going to endorse, that I wasn't going to fight for or promote a candidate. And once I decided that, I was able to watch and listen and think in a way that I observed for the first time the business I used to be in, talk radio and cable television, just appallingly fall all over themselves to endorse people. And I've watched one talk show host after another leverage what little or lots of fame they had to tell you again and again and again what they thought you wanted to hear and who they thought you should vote for, and to throw their support as though they were had some kind of constituency to support a candidate. From Glenn Beck's childlike and really craven fastening of himself to Ted Cruz's leg. Honestly, I think Glenn saw Steve Deese, or Dace, depending on how it's pronounced, get a lot of publicity. He's the Iowa talk show host that supported Ted Cruz from the beginning. And I think that Glenn Beck thought Ted Cruz was going to be the president, and he wanted to jump on board. To Savage and Alex Jones and many others of lesser stature supporting Trump because they thought they should. They all did it. And they all felt the need to throw their lot in with Trump because he wasn't Hillary or he could win. Which, by the way, you know, I said early on, he could win, and people attacked me for that. They wanted you to think that he was the Messiah. They wanted you to think that he was going to fix everything. They wanted you to think he was different and all of that. And a lot of people believed it, and they still believe it. And when he won a well-earned electoral victory in Ohio and Pennsylvania and Georgia and Kentucky and Tennessee and, you know, Ohio, they had to pay off on everything they've said, and they still are, whether it's Sean Hannity or Alex Jones or any of these guys, Savage. No matter what Trump does, they're going to explain it. He flip-flop on this, that, or the other thing. He's really smart, and what's happening is he's in there now, and he's realizing how things are, and he has to do that, but he really doesn't think that. They don't know that. They're just saying that because they've got to protect their constituency. They're still telling you why Trump is this or that, or why he's doing what he's doing, when most of the time they don't know, as though you can't think for yourself. And I know that my listeners can think for themselves. Now, again, I was one of the first people that say that Trump could win because I saw the polls. I know how to read the polls. I understood that. But more importantly, I was on the ground in those small towns in Minnesota and Iowa and Ohio and Missouri and Tennessee and Florida and Georgia and so forth, and Alabama and Mississippi and Texas and Oklahoma and places like that. And it's all there in those campaign and travel podcasts from the campaign trail, because I realized that something was going on out in the hinterlands that wasn't visible in Minnesota's 5th district or in the 3rd district in Illinois or places like that. I also saw people that weren't getting the kind of information that allowed them to make an informed choice when it came to the presidency. I also saw that the Republican Party itself wasn't going to let the delegates and the RNC make an informed choice at the convention based on deliberations and votes on who to nominate for president. I saw and watched them ramrod this guy through and refuse to allow the delegates to actually do their job and what they came there to do. Many of them, of course, were cowards and just threw in the towel and surrendered to Trump. But it's too bad, because I think even if the result had been the same, I think it would have been a stronger party as a result. But the moderates made sure that that wasn't going to happen. I was there for the whole thing. I saw it happen, and I wasn't very impressed, as I have not been from the beginning with both political parties in this country. And I've talked about that too. And I don't mean to offend people, but I think this is, I think people who are intelligent, and I think people who want to make a contribution are actually looking at this stuff now. I do see articles about it in various places. I don't see it in the mainstream media. I don't see it on the reactionary blogs and on the reactionary videos and on the Alex Jones show and so forth. But I do see people talking about this stuff from a little bit more informed point of view. Now, in the middle of all this, there's a lot going on with me personally as well. When you travel as much as I have, now I'm healthy and everything else, but when I'm not saying that there's some personal problem with me, but when you travel as much as I have, even if it's just in the United States, it changes your views. And I know that there are people out there who do not agree with Republicans. Most of them are not mask-wearing protesters beating up on people. Most of them are really nice people, as nice as the Republicans I know, who are also really nice people who mean well. They would give you the shirt off of their back, both sides. They're real people. They live in real towns. They have kids. They have jobs. And they're not bad people. They're not jerks just because they have a D in front of their name or an R in front of their name. They just have a difference of opinion about how things should be. And if you look at them as human beings, then you can understand that. The other thing, and this is going to sound weird, especially to certain people, but when you do as much yoga as I do and have done, you learn that you're going to come face to face with yourself. And you're going to go through a lot of changes, particularly as it relates to ego. And when you read as much news as I have done as much research as I have and have followed the campaigns on the road as I have, well, you can't help but take a little bit different point of view. And I wouldn't give up that adventure for anything. It was the most fun that I've had in 10 years. And I wouldn't have been able to do that if I'd been working on the radio every day. I would have been basically a spectator, and I wouldn't have learned what I learned on the road. You're not sitting in your living room anymore as a spectator because you're in it, and you see it as it's happening, and you see what the cameras are shooting, and you realize what looks big on television really isn't. And I've tried to convey that and to bring that to you through these podcasts. And I think I've done a good job. And I am saying to people again and again, and they don't like it from certain circles, the information that you think is reliable isn't. And I'm saying to people, for the most part, we are being manipulated. And I know because I check this stuff minute by minute, and there's so much reactionary stuff being posted about where ships are and where they're not and what it means if the president doesn't know where a ship is. Did he? Didn't he? Things that are not going to be important in 10 years, things that are going to be forgotten. But if you steep yourself in that stuff, it's going to form chains of reasoning in your mind, and it's going to lead you down the wrong road. So again, lots of reactionary stuff, not very factual, and it's part of the decision-making change. And I think it's the biggest problem in this country politically and socially. What is lacking is basically political principles. And that's true with the Democrats. They are working on it, which is one of the reasons that they're embracing Bernie Sanders. I mean, it's basically American socialism, which actually isn't that far from what Republicans do when they get elected. But I don't see the same level of soul searching with Republicans beginning to take place. I see them continuing to support a president who has policy ideas that really don't make sense for Republicans. There are significant shifts in policy and ideas that he has had since the beginning, which are clearly un-Republican at best. Let's just put it this way. He is not Ronald Reagan, not even close to Ronald Reagan, which is what all these people wanted in the first place. They want another Ronald Reagan. Donald Trump is not another Reagan. He's not another Andrew Jackson. I actually compare him the most to kind of a combination of Nixon and Johnson. Not real good role models for the presidency. That's my own personal opinion. I'm sorry. I'm sure I'll get a defensive reaction from that as people try to argue against that. But the question is, why do some believe differently? Where do they get their information and so forth? What I hear isn't arguments on the policy. I say, what has this president done that's Republican? And you get no answer. What I hear is, why are you doing that? Why do you want to alienate people? How dare you? You know? So what is happening now is, and this really fits into all this other stuff that I've talked about, we're going through another shift like we did in the late 90s. Politics are changing. It's ugly. I don't like talking about politics. I don't like doing this podcast. I just feel I need to because I think people need to understand what my passion is and how authentic I am and where I'm coming from. I'm not saying this stuff for any reason other than this is the way I feel. Like it or don't like it. But it's a way for you to think. You can position against it. And this is what I have always done. It has gotten me into so much trouble over the years in radio, you can't imagine. I have gotten fired. I have been yelled at. I have people freak out because I'm always out there on the edge and I always say what I think and how I feel for the most part without much of a filter, and it gets me into trouble all the time. It isn't meant maliciously. It's just what I do. But we're going through another shift. Like we did in the late 90s. This is a shift where politics are changing. The people who used to be 30 and 40, as I mentioned, are in their late 60s and early 70s, and they're getting tired. And a new generation is assuming the reins of power. They are different from their grandparents and their parents. They do not see things the same way as their parents and grandparents. Even when they are quote-unquote conservative, they aren't conservative in the same ways as their dads and granddads were, and they're going to inherit these party structures. There's also a technology shift, an economic shift, and an industrial shift, and the world is changing. All these things are coming into play. Not just that, but countries rising, China, you know, Russia, Eastern Europe, all that. The post-World War II world is gone. It's ashes. It's never coming back. The Cold War world is gone. It's ashes. It's never coming back. Even the post-Cold War world that Bill Clinton inhabited as president is gone. We are moving into a new paradigm, and there's all bets are off. There's nothing to hang on to. We're in a storm with no tether. And I'm concentrating in this on looking for facts and making sure that I am not being used by the powers that be to promote their agenda, especially locally. I can't stand the local Republicans. The only thing I'm saying is this. I think that new political parties ultimately have to be forged both on both spectrums. And I think probably the spectrums will eventually flip. The old coalition of moderate and religious conservatives and libertarian conservatives is split by hundreds of different issues on the left. They are split by many more. You have moderates, socialists, and radicals. So this is going to take a lot of work. And I think the people that I know of, you know, are certainly capable of doing the work. The problem is they aren't doing the work. And that's why the people you vote for don't do what you want them to do, because there's no base to stop them, because they've killed the base. You know, they betrayed the base at the Republican convention twice. Three times since 2008, they've betrayed the Republican base that wanted something different. And that is why often when you hear Republicans talk about the people that they elect, they get mad and they say that they're betrayed, because they say one thing and they do another, because this is what they do. Because when they get to their legislature, they learn the power isn't the people. The power is the committee chairs and the leadership that yells at them and tells them what to do if they expect to get reelected. And of course, they want to get reelected once they get in there. Now, if you want to hear blue skies and sunshine, then listen to one of the hosts doing the bidding of the wealthy guys living in places like Minnesota's Lake Minnetonka, Mission Hills in Kansas, Chicago's Gold Coast and Lincoln Park, Manhattan, Los Angeles, Scottsdale, Arizona, any number of other places where wealthy business people and wealthy government workers, you know, six-figure judges and so forth live. Or you can listen to a little podcaster who's made it a mission to run down the facts, not the hyperbole, who isn't going to tell you who to vote for ever, and who won't even tell you who's right, because I don't know. Because I've learned sometimes the guys you think are right aren't. Who wants you to learn to get away from the conspiracy theorists and how to find your reasonable facts about what we know about a situation, not somewhat what somebody thinks or not what some tarot card reader wants to predict. Whether it's the economy, politics, travel, or just walking around in the middle of the night with the digital recorder talking about life, I don't mean to offend or alienate by trying to get at known facts rather than what passes for journalism in this country today. And don't be so quick to jump on board yourself until you know where the train is going. My sense is there's a lot of Republicans and so-called conservatives, as well as Democrats and so-called liberals, who don't know where their trains are headed. And personally, I think they're both headed to the same destination. As far as this podcast is concerned, since I have refused to support a candidate or defend the president, who certainly is capable of defending himself, or push an ideology, my feeds have been growing. We have nearly 100,000 every month. There are thousands listening to the audio stream off the page at thebobdavispodcast.com every week. If you're doing that right now, welcome. So I'm getting stronger, not weaker, because I have found freedom and truth in being non-aligned in a world that demands fealty from all these different sources. And I would just say, if you support that, you are not supporting liberty. So more travel. I have big plans for the gubernatorial race in Minnesota next year and the presidential race in 2020, and definitely plans for more yoga and more travel and more places to go in Mobile Podcast Command. And I'm working hard to build the business and to determine what we know about issues and events with opinions and agenda, news, and commentary filtered out. And I'm going to continue to do that. Now, when I have an opinion, I'll tell you I have an opinion, but I will never tell you who to vote for or what to support, or who's right, or what's real or not real. I'll just tell you what I know. Those are your decisions, and I believe that you're capable of making those decisions and living with them. Thanks once again to Brush Studio for sponsoring this podcast, Podcast 623, the Bob Davis Podcast. Don't forget, the classes fill up pretty fast. So reach out to Brush Studio at 952-236-1700. That's 952-236-1700. But you can sign up online at brushstudio.net. It's a great way to spend an evening, business, corporate events, family, or friends. And thanks once again to Brush Studio. Thank you for listening to the Bob Davis Podcasts by subscribing at iTunes or right off the page at thebobdavispodcast.com, TuneIn, Stitcher.com, Blog Talk Radio. I do appreciate the likes and the shares and the favoriting on Facebook and Twitter, the banes of my existence. And, but the one I really like is Instagram. I think Instagram is such a great social media. Really appreciate the donations for the thebobdavispodcast.com mobile unit. The 2000 Ford Super Duty ambulance. And you can make those donations at thebobdavispodcasts.com. Thanks for listening to Podcast 623.